based opinions of Dr. Fred Harvey, the callers, and his guests. These are not the opinions of the staff, the volunteers, or the board of WMNF. The information provided on the show is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease. There is no implied patient-physician relationship in these calls. The nature of the calls is educational and informational only.
Good morning to you, my dear friend. Goodness gracious alive, isn't it darn near ecstasy to fill your Monday listening to the Healthy Steps radio show here on WMNF Tampa, the only radio station that they stream in the Slough House, and you can stream us as well at WMNF.org. Guess what, my little happy campers? I'm going to say the three words that you've been waiting to hear. Ask me anything. Yes, today is Ask Me Anything Monday here on the Healthy Steps radio show. So get off your duff and give us a call at 813-239-9663. Again, that's 813-239-9663. Irene came in today expressly looking forward to taking your call. You can also send an email to dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. Well, good morning to you, Dr. Harvey, and let me tell you, I'm happier than a flower in the sunshine whenever you have an Ask Me Anything Monday. So I'll step aside now, Dr. Fred, and let this show go to full bloom. What have you got for us today, Dr. Harvey?
Thank you, Bill. Once again, a beautiful introduction on a beautiful Monday.
Absolutely.
What a day. Well, the pollen's been heavy. If you've noticed, everything's yellow, and oaks are very, very fertile this year. I'm sure a lot of people are struggling with their spring hay fever. But there are some good things to do about that. First things first, decrease the load. Try to avoid spending a whole lot of time under oaks when you're actually in allergy season. It'll be over shortly. But in the meantime, make sure that you have your HEPA filter running in your house and try a neti pot, that little device that you fill with some salt and baking soda water to help clean out the debris in your nose. You know, if you wash away some of those pollen particles, you'll have a little less reactivity. There's some good supplements you can take for that too. The combination that I like has some proteolytic enzyme called bromelain from pineapple. It helps to break down some mucus. N-acetylcysteine is also a great mucus buster. And stinging nettle leaf is a really wonderful natural sort of antihistamine. And quercetin helps to stabilize the mast cells so they don't put out the histamine. These things are really useful in helping to control the difficult time many people are having with allergies these days. Regular antihistamines like Claritin and Zyrtec and things like that are also very helpful. I wouldn't recommend using nasal decongestants like Afrin or those things for more than a day or two. But if you actually use those with a nasal steroid like Flonase, other over-the-counter fluticasone preparations, you can actually get some really good results and not have to use decongestants very much longer. In any event, yes, this allergy season should pass soon. Once the oaks stop flowering and spewing their pollen everywhere, we should be in a little bit better shape. But we're also still dealing with a bunch of viruses. We've got adenoviruses and coronaviruses, you know, beta coronavirus, the family in which the SARS-CoV-2 COVID virus lives or resides. It is 30% or more of all annual colds, upper respiratory infections. And so that's something that we need to pay attention to. One thing really interesting about that is they've been looking at ways to prevent having severe COVID response. And they have really been studying this for a couple of years since we've got the pandemic going on, but vitamin D has been studied for many years in conjunction with different viruses. And what we found out is it's very supportive to the body. And the most recent systemic review, a meta-analysis is called, where you look at multiple articles and evaluate the efficacy of an intervention. This was published February 25 this year. They look at the difference between people who did not have vitamin D supplementation and those that did, and they found that it's highly protective. The studies show that there's actually a 60% lowered risk of actually the incidence of COVID-19 if you're taking vitamin D supplementation. And the possibility of being admitted to an ICU is reduced by 70%. That's pretty impressive. So what their conclusion is that this analysis suggests a definitive and significant association between the protective role of vitamin D in COVID-19 incidence and ICU admission. Therefore, there's no reason for you not to be taking some vitamin D to support yourself. Usually I see people on about 2,000, maybe 5,000 units would be good. You might want to get your vitamin D level checked if you're taking 5,000 units a day, but those are relatively good doses to help prevent serious viral illness. This also extends to other viruses too, because we've seen that there is an issue with it helping to suppress herpes virus and possibly influenza. And so I think it's really fascinating that we're finding this information and we have other tools than simply shots. And so, there's a lot of controversy still about shots. Just read another article that describes the intervention as a vax gene rather than a vaccine. And it does make sense because the definition of vaccine was changed so that we would accept this shot as a quotes vaccine end quotes, but it's not. It's a vax gene because it uses gene therapy unlike any other prior vaccine. And with that, we're seeing something different. We're seeing more inflammation. We're seeing more inflammation with these shots. And when I've done a recent literature review looking for problems with inflammation, I went to the brain because it's the most important thing. You know, there's been a lot of controversy about autism and shots and such. And there's been a recent finding that ADHD and autism actually, and also schizophrenia, these things might occur because of brain inflammation in early childhood. And what we know is that viruses can cause brain inflammation, but so can some of the shots. And it's interesting that older adults end up having more brain inflammation, it seems, from regular vaccines. Respiratory syncytial virus vaccine may cause some inflammation in older adults. Influenza vaccine can too. And it's interesting when they look at measles, mumps, rubella, a very common childhood vaccine and one that's kind of been challenged here in Florida by the Surgeon General of Florida, has brought it forefront. And looking at that, there's really not much in the way of encephalitis in children from taking the vaccine. They haven't recorded really much association. Encephalitis occurs, but it occurs from all kinds of other reasons. And when you compare kids, and this is done years ago, they probably need to repeat this study because since 1982, they changed the type of vaccines. They've changed the way they're formulated. And I think it's worth to do another study, a prospective study rather than a retrospective, and actually looking directly forward to see whether it actually causes any inflammation now. But there was no difference between kids that got it and kids that didn't in the terms of the amount of encephalitis. However, That's different when it comes to the SARS-CoV-2 injection. There is evidence that we are seeing post-vaccine encephalitis, and it's not infrequent. It's present in pretty much equally in males and females, and it seems to be mostly with the AstraZeneca and Pfizer, but Moderna also caused it. And so if we're concerned that brain inflammation could cause ADHD and autism, then we need to really pay attention to children getting the COVID-19 vaccine or Vaxgene, because acute nervous system inflammation following the shots is real. And so we could end up with some serious inflammatory disorders and serious brain system, central nervous system problems ongoing. Numerous studies are showing that this is the case. And so I think it's worth it to consider that this new Vaxgene therapy is something different, because the other previous standard vaccines don't appear to be doing this. And that's really of concern. And it's of concern to me at this point that there are really no callers to talk yet. So I just want to make sure that people know this is an interactive show, the Healthy Steps Show, and we're on WMNF Tampa.
Absolutely, and none too soon to say that. So if you're just tuning in, welcome to the Healthy Steps Radio Show here on WMNF Tampa. And the topic today is AMA, Ask Me Anything. So you, my friend, you are in the driver's seat. What's on your mind? You tell us. If you have any medical questions or concerns, you're invited to participate by calling 813-239-9663. As I keep reminding folks, Irene came on into the control room just waiting to take your treasured call. So, again, that number is 813-239-9663, or continue to send your emails to dj@wmnf.org. Back to you there, Doctor.
So, it looks like I have one email so far. The question is, have I had any luck with ivermectin helping people with long COVID? And does ivermectin bind with the spike protein or have any anti-inflammatory properties? So first, ivermectin does not bind with the spike protein. The mechanism of action of ivermectin in inhibiting beta coronavirus from actually causing viral illness is that it works on, and this is published data, I think it was in Nature 2006, and I think there was another article in 2016 about the same concept. And the ivermectin actually blocks a protein inside cells called importin. Importin is necessary to bring the mRNA into the cell so that it can be transcribed. And they showed in these papers that the virus is not able to implant the mRNA into the cells when ivermectin blocks importin. So it actually decreased the infectivity of the virus. And so ivermectin does seem to have some anti-inflammatory properties as well. I have not seen ivermectin specifically help any patient with long COVID. Long COVID is very complex and a significant inflammatory illness. Ivermectin doesn't really treat that very well directly. And so there are much better protocols that include many more interventions than simply the ivermectin, although several protocols include ivermectin initially, but that is only for the first couple of weeks, hopefully to decrease further implantation of the COVID spike protein or the mRNA into the cells. But the issue with long COVID appears to be a reservoir of spike protein, not mRNA, in macrophages, a subset of white blood cells. And the macrophages continue to spew out the spike protein periodically, which irritates the blood vessel linings. And so all therapies directed at reducing vascular inflammation are what seem to be most effective. One group, the Bruce Patterson COVIDLonghauler.com group, who developed the COVID long haulers cytokine storm test, they've been using, because he found that this medication helps to stop vascular inflammation. They've been using Mevacor or lovastatin, the first statin that was patented back in the late 80s. It seems to actually interrupt the process. And so there are effective ways of dealing with long COVID, but they're not simple. You have to actually really pay attention to what's going on with the client and really watch the cytokine storm to help improve it overall. And I believe we finally have some callers.
Actually, we do. We've got Tom, Deborah, and Rick on the line, but we had such success with that last call on out. I'm going to shake the caller tree one more time and say you are invited to call 813-239-9663 to participate in the Ask Me Anything component of the Healthy Steps radio show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. Again, that number is 813-239-9663. And I'm going to go to Tom in Sarasota. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. What a beautiful day. This is so on topic with what I'm dealing with. I had to call in. Back in July, I contracted COVID, and a week after that, my fingers started swelling up, and then the inflammation went into my wrists and shoulders and hips and all through my body, and I'm still dealing with it severely. I mean, I wake up in the middle of the night, and the inflammation is so bad, I feel like I've been in a car accident or something. And before that, I was perfectly healthy, and we eat healthy, and, you know, we take very good care of ourselves, and so it was a very new incident for me to deal with. And since then, we're researching heavily on, you know, what's causing it. And I did end up seeing a functional doctor. And we took 30 vials of blood, and my blood came back showing that I was having trouble methylating, which I learned meant that my body is not using the vitamins, or it's running out of vitamins. So I was very low in vitamin C and B and D. So right now I'm taking supplements heavily, and I'm just about to start a round of the ivermectin. It's very interesting listening to what you're talking to this morning.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got long COVID. And I was wondering, have you had the COVID long hauler test look at your cytokine storm yet?
He did diagnose me with long COVID, yes.
But if you're looking at the cytokine storm, the thing that actually causes your problem.
Well, from his explanation of the blood work, I think we did figure that that's what I was dealing with.
Okay. I usually do the COVID long haulers test in people with the long COVID so I can follow their cytokine storm to resolution. I want to see it go down.
I see. Yeah, it's really interesting to research all this and find out what's happening. This spike protein seems to be a big problem, and it looks like it's going to be the culprit to a lot of problems that people are going to end up dealing with in the near future. It just seems like there's not a lot known about it and not a lot known about the treatment. So it's interesting to follow along with it, like you're saying. But it's been debilitating to me. I've never had any type of arthritis problems, and now I can't even lift a coffee cup up to my mouth without two hands. You know, it's my wrists are so sore and my shoulders. It's really debilitating.
You know, one of the first things that is on the FLCCC long COVID recovery protocol is the use of ivermectin and prednisone. Using steroids to help reduce that inflammation often can get you over the hump.
That's interesting. I did see a doctor and I did get a shot. I'm not sure what type of steroid it was, but I did get a shot in my fingers. My fingers were so swollen and I didn't know what it was at first. And then I realized they call it COVID finger.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's all over the internet. And my fingers are still swollen to a point I can't even, wrap my fingers around, you know, things. And it's just very uncomfortable. But, I had no idea in the beginning. But then we just traced things back backwards. And a week before my fingers swelled up, I was in a music gathering with lots of people in a tiny little room. And it was obvious what happened, and I was sick. I did test for COVID, and I did not test positive, but you know how that goes. It was timing, I think. But I obviously had COVID for the second time. From what I'm seeing, that in these studies, that the second time you get sick is when some of these bad inflammation problems come out.
Yeah, more challenges tend to make it worse. There's lots of more things you can do if you're not improving. Check out the FLCCC protocol and COVIDLonghaulers.com. They have great information about it. And best wishes there. Hope you feel better soon.
Appreciate it, Doc. I'll check in later and let you know how it's going.
Okay, great.
Yeah, please do that, Tom. We'd like to hear some follow-up on it, and good luck with your symptoms there. I'm going to go to Deborah in St. Pete and still have Rick waiting patiently. Good morning, Deborah.
Hello.
Hello, Deborah.
Hi. So I have a very high, the number is 806 calcium cardiac score. What would you recommend?
Well, I would recommend that you begin work on vascular inflammation, since that's what causes that. And so it's time to look at a Mediterranean diet where you have 80 to 90% plant, 20 to 10% animal intake, organic, eliminate all the toxins, no added sugar, no added colors, no added flavors, no added preservatives, avoid the processed food aisle, and exercise and meditate.
What about chelation?
Chelation therapy is a fabulous thing to do. Yes, I think that would be a great place to go with your coronary artery disease.
Okay, I don't know what type of chelation, like what it's called, or
called chelation therapy. There's only one that actually does vascular treatment. It's a recipe that was created by the American College for Advancement in Medicine back in the 70s. It is an IV bag that has 500 milliliters of water into which is added 7 grams of vitamin C, 2 grams of magnesium chloride, up to 3 grams of EDTA, the chelating agent, and that is adjusted based on your kidney function so that you don't get too much that your kidneys can't handle it. It's quite safe that way. There are B vitamins involved as well, and some heparin to help thin the blood.
Is this kind of a metabolic process, getting the body to use that calcium or rid the calcium excess?
No, it's actually a metabolic process where the intravenous therapy induces something called endothelial-derived nitric oxide synthetase, lots of words, meaning that it helps the blood vessels dilate naturally using its own system. And then it actually puts nutrients and antioxidants deep down into tissues where they weren't before, because the blood vessels are now open and allowing the flow.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Okie dokie. Yes, we do have a couple of callers on the line. Rick, as I say, has been waiting patiently. JC just called on in. But I'm going to encourage you to give a call as well to the Healthy Steps Radio Show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. The number is 813-239-9663, or continue to send the emails to dj@wmnf.org. So give us a call, 813-239-9663. Good morning to you there, Rick.
Hello.
Hello, Rick.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call, and I love supporting this radio station. I'm so incredibly impressed with your guest you have on today, Ms. Nodge. And I'm calling because I'm concerned about, well, my daughter has long haul COVID, but also I really wanted to know, given the emphasis on information, which is so appropriate, what your physician thinks about Dr. Jeffrey Bland's work, Dr. Dale Bredesen's work, and Dr. Daniel Amen's work on basically on inflammation. They all deal with inflammation, but basically the implications in terms of with respect to COVID, cutting down inflammation, period, through things like, again, diet, of course, probably supplements, some exercise, appropriate sleep, and things like that. My daughter had long haulers COVID, and she's struggling to get past that. And she's dealing with a number of these issues, and as a result, is making some progress. So at any rate, I'll stop with that and just let this wonderful physician try and address that.
Yeah, very good question. The Dr. Bland, Jeffrey Bland, is probably, from my perspective, one of the most brilliant medical minds on the planet today. He's not a doctor. He's a PhD biochemist who directed Linus Pauling's Institute. And Linus Pauling is the guy that put vitamin C on the map and also got a second Nobel Prize for fighting against nuclear armaments. The only scientist to actually have two Nobel Prizes in two different fields in his lifetime. And Bland is the father of functional medicine. Jeffrey Bland has been telling us about nutritional biochemistry and how it affects our bodies for 30 plus years. Brilliant guy, my guru, the man that changed my career because he gave a lecture in Orlando in 1997 that just changed the way I perceive the way medicine works, the way health works. And I thank him for that. And I've thanked him numerous times for it because he's changing the face of the delivery of actual health care on the planet. Thank you, Jeff Bland. Daniel Amen and Dale Bredesen, they're following in his footsteps. They understand what he taught and they've gone to the brain with it. Daniel Amen looks at inflammation and brain health, and Dale Bredesen looks at inflammation and Alzheimer's specifically in brain health. And Dr. Bredesen's work has proven that we actually have a way to reverse Alzheimer's disease, to reverse cognitive decline, to end Alzheimer's. It's complex. It's functional medicine. It's multifaceted. It requires us to look at what Dale Bredesen called the 36 holes in the roof. And we have to patch those holes in order to keep the brain from leaking out, basically. And so it's all about inflammation, and toxicity drives inflammation. And so all these things that I talk about, supporting your system to get rid of inflammation, supporting your system so it can do the right metabolism, and removing the things that cause the problems so that you can actually have less inflammation, this is the answer to human health.
I agree. I am so incredibly impressed with you. And again, I love supporting this station. It's such a great station. If I might, I might suggest for the readers, too, although it's a bit depressing, and by the way, I've done research for decades, not in these particular areas, but in other things I've published, blah, blah, blah. I've even reviewed articles for publication, yada, yada. So I'm not stupid about the scientific process. And the bottom line is a book that was one of the most troubling things of all for me. I don't know if you're familiar with it, sir, but it's called The War on Ivermectin. It was published about a year ago by Dr. Pierre Corey, K-O-R-Y.
Yes.
And it's a remarkable explanation of, I guess, the degradation of the scientific process or perversion of the scientific process, publication, and even premier journals like JAMA and New England Journal of Medicine and some of the nonsense politics that have crept into, as well as financial stuff. But at any rate, I think the book is probably most interesting because, again, he points out, as you point out, the mechanisms, but the effectiveness of ivermectin being used worldwide, South America, Africa, India, and the decrease in death rate because of the use of that particular drug. But in this case,
it really did show that. There's a very big decrease in death. In fact, the ITEC study that was published here in JAMA, I think in 2022, showed a 70% reduction in mortality. Truly. They actually published a 70% reduction in mortality. But because of you're a researcher and publisher, you understand this, statistical significance is a arbitrary number. And in medicine, they've assigned a statistical significance of a p-value of 0.05, which means 95% likely that it's not random. But in the ivermectin study, they found a 91% likelihood it's not random. So it's strange to me that they're saying that it doesn't work when they proved that it worked, but it just didn't quite meet a statistical standard, which is arbitrary. It has nothing to do with the actual reality that there was a 70% reduction in mortality. It's just that it was only 91% confident, not 95% confident. That's a really sad state of affairs when it comes to politicizing health information.
Right. One more thing. I think for the rest of your viewers, it would be very helpful, and I certainly would like to know your opinion on the pros and cons of the use of the new Paxlovid medication, which is being prescribed. I wanted to get my hands on ivermectin. I'm having very much difficulty. No surprise there. But now they prescribe this Paxlovid, which, if you know, within the first 5 days of onset of symptoms of COVID, if you take it, it reduces the cytokine storm. And therefore, you can kind of avoid a lot of that nonsense that you've been talking about, sir. Can you talk a little bit about maybe your concerns? If you think it's good, Paxlovid?
I think Paxlovid is an expensive alternative to ivermectin. And we've also seen that Paxlovid fails in a lot of cases to keep people well because there's recurrences after stopping it. And then it does keep people from going to the ICU and dying, but I haven't seen the statistics versus the ivermectin 70% reduction and the hydroxychloroquine 70% reduction.
Right. Well, I guess the final thing is for everybody out there, for everybody, not just me, I can't get my hands on the ivermectin because I can't get my physicians to prescribe it because they're afraid.
You can get it online.
So how can people get a hold of ivermectin and know that it's good, not getting it just from India or something from a generic, but how can people get a hold of ivermectin?
Well, many doctors are prescribing it, and you can get it online from a telehealth visit from doctors. During the pandemic, Florida made it possible for out-of-state doctors to do telehealth consults in Florida. All they need to do is register. And so you can actually do telehealth with a doctor from outside of Florida and get an ivermectin prescription from a pharmacy.
So how can I get somebody like that? Because I would like to get some, because the reason I'm mentioning this too, and it's for all the reviewers, I mean, listeners may enjoy this. We're going to be taking a trip to Alaska this summer, and we're going to be gone for like a long time. Anyways, if we were to somehow contract this, I would like to have a supply on hand to, prophylactic or reactively, whatever, deal with it. So how can I find some of these doctors that would be willing to, through telehealth, like you said, prescribe this? Because some doctors are afraid to do that.
Well, personally, I've seen that hydroxychloroquine actually reduces the inflammation better than the ivermectin, just in my clients. But you just have to go online and search for it. It's basically everywhere. It's become very easy to access, and as opposed to early in the pandemic.
Okay. Well, at any rate, then, so from what I'm hearing from you, what I might want to try to do is have them prescribe me some hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah, that's, most people aren't having an issue with that, and it's the same kind of course. Look up the article from Iran in 2020. It's the one that President Trump referred to. One of his advisors told him hydroxychloroquine works. They had a study of 4,700 people, I believe it was, in Iran, and they found out that if you give this dose of hydroxychloroquine in the first 3 days, you actually reduce mortality by 70%.
Well, that's good to know, and that may be one reason why my wife has been spared some serious consequences because of her rheumatoid arthritis. She's on hydroxychloroquine, and I thought, I wonder if that's keeping her kind of healthy. I guess it is. I better get off here so some other calls can come on. But, sir, and DJ, I want to thank you guys. Somebody this sharp, I have not heard in a long time, sir, and I'm extremely impressed with your knowledge. And thank you for the information today, and God bless you. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Have a great day.
Thank you there, Rick. And indeed, we do have other callers. I've got JC, Susan, and Bonnie. Let's go to JC. Good morning to you, and thanks for your patience there, JC.
Hey, no worries. Thank you, guys. And, man, what a follow-up to that gentleman. I'm impressed with the caller and as well as the doctor's knowledge. Good show. And now I feel like I'm not as my question isn't as complicated or intelligent. So I 61-year-old male, African-American male, never had COVID. I've had just like a sinus infection that really didn't go into an infection phase where it was like a colored mucus. It was all clear, almost like a allergy reaction to some type of allergies. But I'm also, you know, my
when did you have this?
The allergy reaction?
Yeah.
Just recently. And it's cleared up now, as you can tell. So my doctors call me an anomaly because I'm a 61-year-old male, 6'2", you know, 225 pounds. That's not on anything. I'm not on any prescribed medications, no blood pressure problems, no cholesterol, none of that stuff. Kind of eat healthy, work out. You know, been an athlete when I was younger. I guess my question would be, you worry when you're moving out and about in public and you're in elevators, and should we be using masks still to just in certain situations when you're someone like in my age who still is in the working population and has to go out into the public in a working environment? Should I mask in certain situations?
So what it appears that when you sort through all of the evidence, there are articles out there that say that it does nothing. There are articles out there that says that it's God's gift. I think we're somewhere in the middle. And common sense would suggest that since the mask doesn't really prevent a lot or all of the small particles from coming into someone, that it's not as protective for a person who doesn't want to get ill. But for someone who has an illness, someone who might be transmitting, if you put the mask in front of their face and catch a significant amount of their particulate, then you're going to reduce their infectivity in public. So it makes sense if you're ill to either stay home or wear a mask. If you have immunocompromise, it probably makes sense to wear a mask, though the benefit is not as clear, but it could be there. But if you're ill, you should wear a mask to protect other people. It's only courteous.
I agree 100%. Thank you for that. And I had another question. If I could, real quick, I'm seeing a rise. It's almost in like the car wash rise of these plasma places. What is that? Is plasma a healthy thing to donate? Is that what is the science behind that? Or what are we doing there?
Plasma is very important because we are using blood products in human health. So platelets and other things are at the blood bank, but there are some immune globulins and other things that are being harvested from the plasma that seem to be of use medically. They're also using these things in experiments. And so there are companies out there that are paying money to harvest plasma. They've been doing it since I was in college. That was 40 years ago. And so it tends to be a standard scientific procedure, and you know, it's valid. It works.
Interesting. Do you know what percentage of our population has not had COVID yet? Is there such a number? As like, I haven't been that I know of because I haven't been sick to the point of something that was beyond what I had when I was younger. But I also do not get sick regularly. I go long spells before I ever get sick. So I don't consider myself ever having COVID because, you know, it's just a sinus infection, if that, not really an infection. But is there a percentage of the population they think has not had it?
Well, there is definitely a percentage. I don't know what the number is, but there was just an article I was reading about the whatever they call them, the super protected or something. So if you've not had it, you might be a target for a clinical study to figure out why it is you have not had it.
And I'd be willing to participate in that. I definitely want to help my fellow brethren. I'd love to hear about something like that. If you come across something that MNF could publish it, let us know on the radio. I'd let you participate. I'm sure some others would too. Hey, thank you for your time, sir, and thank you to MNF for taking my call. Have a great day.
You're so welcome, JC. Have a great one.
Indeed. Thank you, JC. We appreciate that. And I've got Susan, Bonnie, and Leon on the line. So let's go to Susan. And we're down to about the last 15 minutes of a great show. Good morning, Susan.
Hi there. Hi, Dr. Harvey.
Hi there.
I admire your brilliance, anything you can share. I'm down in Florida till the end of April. When I was up north and for a very long time, every time I turned to get out of bed, the pain was excruciating in my back. And I had all kind of stuff. I went to a nurse practitioner who said it was sciatica. I said, it's not sciatica. And then I went to a chiropractor who said it's strained sprain. And that sounded better. I still have some things. I came down here with a terrible knee hurt, and with that made appointments at Kennedy White, and I did go for x-rays for my knee. I'm not a person who likes x-rays, but it was valuable. I learned I have bone-on-bone, very bad arthritis, and mostly in the meniscus, and both knees will keep getting worse, he told me, and I am bow-legged. That was valuable, but I'm also just thinking of whether to keep the appointment with the back doctor. I think the doctors down here are better than where I live. Up there, I don't think they're so good. And but they send you for the x-rays. I'm not sure if I need x-rays. I still have some hurt in my back, but any thoughts on that?
Well, back pain is often a result of poor posture and problems with other joints, so if you're bow-legged, you're probably going to get back pain. If the back pain is not constant and not persistent, then it's probably something that is related to an acute strain or sprain. And you know, are x-rays needed to follow a muscular injury? No. And do they provide any information for a muscular injury? Not really. But if you have continued pain in the back and the pain goes down your leg, you might consider getting an MRI to see if you have a disc problem.
I'm claustrophobic. I don't think I could even do the open ones. But I keep thinking, well, I get more information, but what am I going to do if they tell me you have this and you have that? I'm going to exercise no matter what. You think from what I'm describing, I could on and off just have sprains and strains.
You could. I don't know enough about you. It sounds like you have terrible arthritis of your knees, which is going to contribute overall to the dysfunction of the rest of the system.
Terrible. And in my other leg, I have lymphedema. I'm bow-legged, and I have arthritis there, too. So
yeah, that's going to really strain your back. So if you can do exercises that would maintain your back health and keep your back pain to a minimum, that's great, because that's the best way to do it.
So strain and sprain sounds logical, like what it is.
Yeah, or you may be having some degenerative joint disease, some arthritis of your spine because of chronic knee problems.
Right, so they go together.
Yes, they do.
Right, and all I'll do is worry about it, and I'm still going to exercise. And I think core is probably the best thing I can do, and I do, I walk. I was jumping on my trampoline. I think that made my knee worse. But I will do whatever I have to do to avoid a knee replacement. I can't stand pain, and I'm not good. I wouldn't do the pain meds. I mean, I know about all that junk, and I can't swallow pills. So I will do physical therapy. I heard a knee brace might be a way to go. Do you think so?
Well, when you have bone on bone, sometimes the injection of hyaluronic acid, the gooey stuff that makes up the matrix, the joint fluid, it helps to give you a buffer. So it gives you a cushion that helps with some of that pain. But it only is temporary. But it can be very helpful for 6 months or so.
Yeah, the doctor has said first order of business is physical therapy. Then you do shots and meds. And I'm not going to do his shots and his meds. And I do work with someone who does muscle testing, and I never come out good with hyaluronic acid. Maybe maybe I should consider that again. But I hope I do have pain in my knee, but not every minute. But I can avoid, there's a question, I could avoid a joint replacement, right? A knee replacement?
Well, you can do whatever you want, but if the pain's bad enough, you might want to get a joint replacement.
Yeah. But it should be more constant than what I've got.
Probably. Have a great week, Susan.
Thank you very much.
All right. I've got Bonnie on the line there, and then Leon, and we got the lights coming on up, so we got somebody in the wings. Good morning, Bonnie.
Good morning, Dr. Harvey.
Good morning, Bonnie.
Hey, I'm late to the show this morning, but I heard you talking with a few callers back about ivermectin.
Yes.
And is that in relation to the COVID pandemic as a treatment?
Yes.
Because I just need to know, is this the same ivermectin that I, as a horse owner, give my horses on a regular cycle for prevention of parasites in their digestive system? Or is this some other pharmaceutical form?
It's different in that the horse medicine is a paste that has a laxative for the horse in it. And so ivermectin alone is ivermectin. And that's a pill that just has nothing else in it.
Okay. I was just wondering. I didn't know. So I was just wondering. Not that I would ever take it. But okay. Thanks, Dr. Harvey. That's all I wanted to know. Have a great day and thanks for your show.
Okay. You too. Take care.
Thanks. Thank you, Bonnie. There's a lot to be said for brevity. Got Leon on the line here. Good morning, Leon.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Harvey.
Good morning.
Yes, I have a question. I'm a 73-year-old male. I've been having knee problems, left knee particularly, for many years, and I'm considering knee replacement pretty soon. And I was just wondering about the robot-assisted procedure. Are you familiar with that procedure, or is there something that I should know about before I decide that procedure, or just get the standard operation?
I don't really know of anybody using robot assisted for anything except for the partial knee replacement, I think, where they have to actually carve out a piece of the bone and fit a special piece into a slot. Other than that, I mean, I think the standard knee replacement's been used for years, and I think it's very effective. I'm just not as impressed with most of the robotic surgeries because they seem to add a layer of complication to all procedures.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for your knowledge that you put out every Monday, and the community really appreciate it. Have a nice day.
You're so welcome.
Bye.
Thank you there, Leon. We're getting down to the last couple of minutes, and I know you've received a couple of emails.
Yes.
So I'm going to direct it that way.
Very good. So I have one from Paula who asks, could I explain how rapamycin, an antifungal medication, can slow down aging by inhibiting a enzyme system in the body? It's too actually way too deep a subject to go into in an answer like this, but I can tell you that I'm not impressed with taking drugs for longevity. Why don't we do it the natural way? Basically the functional medicine way, and take care of your body and help it grow. And then the next question is, would you agree that eating low leucine foods, such as edible plants, and restricting high leucine foods in dairy and meats achieve the slowdown of aging and related disease, such as cancer? There is some evidence that leucine is potentially involved there, but it's interesting. There's so much information on both sides, because leucine-rich protein supplements improve muscle strength in sarcopenic older adults. And sarcopenia is one of the banes of aging. Sarcopenia meaning the loss of muscle wasting as you age. And so it's really a hard question there. And honestly, I think that the Mediterranean diet pans out as the one to do. 80 to 90% plant, 10 to 20% animal. These people live to 100 well. And so I think that longevity to 100 and having a health span to 100 is really very good. And I'm not looking to live to 140 like some of these weird anti-aging longevity gurus that starve themselves for 12 calories a day and do $4,000 worth of supplements a month. It's just some of the weirdest stuff I've witnessed. Why not just live your life? Cortisol. Here's a question from Pamela. She started 2 or 3 months exhibiting physical symptoms of Cushing's. Cushing's syndrome is related to cortisolemia. And ACTH and cortisol blood tests appear to be normal. So there's something other going on. The appearance of cortisol, Cushing syndrome, is something that is, there could be many other causes. So it's apparently not obviously Cushing syndrome here. Here's one. Hi, Dr. Fred. I have AFib and I'm controlling it by getting plenty of sleep, using my CPAP machine and cutting way back on alcohol. For several months, my blood pressure was running around 150 over 86 and my blood pressure steady at 120 over 76. After doing this, he's taking curcumin for inflammation and other health benefits, and can curcumin help regulate my blood pressure? Actually, it may be. It's really hard to be certain about that. But anytime we reduce inflammation, we have improvement in the function of our organs. And so I think that's really an excellent thing you've mentioned. And I hope that actually it continues to do that and keep your blood pressure controlled. Someone asks, what's the difference between homeopathic and functional medicine? Well, homeopathy is a complete specialty that uses dilute poisons, essentially, to remedy the effects of poisons. And functional medicine looks at the entire web of life in a human being and tries to figure out where the imbalances are to correct them so you don't get disease. Very different ways of looking at our reality. So that's basically how those two work. And thank you very much. This has been a great show. I really appreciate everybody calling in and emailing in. Thank you, Bill, for producing a wonderful show. And thanks, Irene, for answering all those phone calls.
Well, speaking on behalf of Irene and myself, thank you. It was a very great show. We enjoyed it. Do you have any sneak previews for next week? Or are we doing AMA?
Oh, we're just going back to AMA.
I love it.
Yeah, it's easy and fun, and I enjoy it, and I think you do too.
I certainly do. And so until next Monday at 10 a.m., I want to thank you, Dr. Fred, to thank Irene and all of our participants and listeners. So have a good day. Have a happy day on purpose, I think is the perfect phrase. And to everybody out there, take care, stay healthy. Y'all are the greatest. You have been listening to the Healthy Steps Radio Show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. Coming on up is 5 minutes of NPR News, and then get ready for the Sustainable Living Show hosted by the unparalleled team of Annie Ellis and Tanya Vidovic. So, that said, until next Monday at 10 a.m., thank you for listening and supporting the Healthy Steps Radio Show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. your community conscious radio station. Stay safe, stay thoughtful, and know that you are loved.